Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio now. Don't touch that dial. Today, it's the Dayton Hamvention. That's what we're talking about, and we have special guest with us, Michael Coulter, WHCI. Now, Michael is the official spokesperson for the Dayton Hamvention, and if you've got questions about Dayton or you want to hear two guys rag chew about Dayton, well, this is the radio program. You found the right spot. We're going to have Michael with us here just in a moment, and we'll do that right after this. Once again, Michael Coulter, WHCI, the official spokesperson for the Dayton Hamvention this year. A lot of radio amateurs get a big bang out of building antennas and experimenting, and I think we all do from time to time. But there comes a time when you're just dead serious about making contacts, and you want the antenna to be right. You want it to be a professionally designed, optimized piece of workhorse gear that's going to reach out there and do exactly what you want it to do. And the experimenting's over with. You're serious about operating. You're serious about contesting. You know, you're serious about working satellites or doing moon bounce, or maybe you're going on a de-expedition and you want to put up an array. Now, I'm not talking about a portable antenna. I'm talking about an array. You want to put something on a tower that's big, that works. If you're looking for that kind of an antenna system, there's one place to look, and that's M Squared Antennas. M Squared. Their website is simply m2inc.com. That's M, the number 2, and then inc.com. M2inc.com. M Squared Antennas. What you're going to find is HF monobanders. You're going to find HF log periodics. You're going to find HF multibanders, 6-meter antennas, 2-meter antennas, 220 megahertz antennas, 440, 902 to S-band. You're going to find their horizontal Omni, the thing that, boy, I'll tell you what, you're working moon bounce. You want to work moon bounce and you want to work satellites. They've got it knocked. They've got all the EME products you could possibly imagine. They have preamps. They have rotators. They have rotator controls. They've got phasing cables. I mean, they've got it all figured out, including preamps and solid-state amplifiers. Now, if that's what you're into, that's it. I'm telling you, one place to go, M Squared Antennas. Once again, their website is m2inc.com. That's M followed by the numeral 2, inc.com. Or you can go to our website, qsoradioshow.com. Go to their website, take a look around, and you know what? You can pick up the phone and you can call them and ask them questions about what it is you're trying to do, and they'll tell you what you need, and they'll work with you. M Squared Antennas. With us today is Michael Coulter, WHCI, and Michael, of course, is with the Dayton Hamvention. I'm sure this is a familiar name to all you folks because he's been on before, and of course, he always sits down with us when we're live at the Dayton Hamvention and talks with us, but he's with us today. Well, Michael, let me ask you, how is Dayton coming along?
Oh, it's going great, Ted. We have so many volunteers working hard. Everything's coming together well. And on behalf of our general chairman, Charles Kaiser, this year, he's working well with the probably over 400 volunteers that we have that gather there to make another great event. But we're excited.
You know, it's a huge undertaking, you know, and when you listen to hams on the radio and it just generally how we are, you know, radio amateurs, you know, I kind of wonder how in the world do you get all these people together cooperating? that's the key word, you know, to pull this thing off, because when you pull it off, it really comes across well. Dayton, when you come to Dayton, it's a friendly atmosphere, but there's just so many people in an area to maintain that kind of attitude and organization. There has to be some sort of method that you guys use.
Absolutely. Each year we go over the process and make sure that where can we improve? Where were our weak spots and where can we improve? Now, I know that we have the Hera Arena. We only use that for a couple of days, 3 days, I think 4 days. And, you know, we work closely with Hera. We work closely with the government officials in the region. We work closely with the Dayton Convention and Visitors Bureau. But we also start, actually, the day after the Hamvention, we all do critiques. We have critique meetings, and we think, okay, next year we want to improve this, this, and this. And the people that we have in the different leadership positions, in the committee leadership positions, just have a passion for amateur radio, and they have a passion for Hamvention. And we still see Hamvention as an important support for many other clubs and organizations throughout the world.
Well, you know, it's been at Hera Arena. I don't know that there's another facility that could even accommodate it in your area. But you all deal with Hera problems. Hera is an aging facility. And everybody when it comes to Dayton says, wow, you know, this place is this place is showing its age, okay? And that is true. But it just seems like when you guys set up Hamvention and we get the thing starts rolling, all of that sort of just kind of disappears. It gets overshadowed. And you might want to talk about that a little bit, because I hear people say that, but I really, when I'm there, I don't really notice that. I don't notice facility problems like a lot of folks. I've heard people say, well, you know, that place is getting old and so on and so forth. But the thing is that I think the excitement of the activities that are going on, you're walking through, you're seeing all these vendors and people talking, and you get out into the flea market area. I guess until there is some sort of a problem of some kind, like there was 1 year out in the flea market area, I just really don't notice the arena. It kind of disappears. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. That's a very good analogy, Ted. One of the things, we work closely with Hera. They come to our regular meetings. One of the biggest complaints year after year is just maintaining restrooms. And we even had people, our own volunteers, checking the restrooms as well as Hera. And as soon as we heard of a problem, you know, Hera was on it. They try hard to keep things clean, keep things caught up. And another thing, you know, I've thought a lot about where else could we move this to. It's so big, and the location is really good for it. But think about all the ham fests in the world that you go to that may be at county fairs, could be, you know, dirt grounds or what have you. Certainly the facility is showing its age. But and I will say for Hera, they've put a lot of money in the infrastructure. They have a lot more sporting events there than they've had and other kind of events. And they are able to get a lot more money, and they've been making more and more improvements on the infrastructure. But as any big organization or let's say older organization, yeah, you may not have as much money to put back in the infrastructure. But we work closely with Hera, and they consider us an important, probably the most important event they have all year, and they have many. But our volunteers and the people with Hera just bend over backwards to try to make it right for our visitors and try to have a good event. But, you know, you always have people that – what is that saying? I think Bob Dylan said this, backseat drivers don't know the feel of the wheel, but they sure know how to make a fuss. You know, but for every complaint we get, we probably get 100 compliments on the fact that we're doing this as a volunteer organization.
Well, you know, I guess what I think about is that when you come to Dayton, and the reason why I'm addressing this is just as something that I've heard, you know, buzzed about, and hams tend to complain about everything. The thing is, though, is we're there, and I would think that this is the way it is with everyone. You're there to see your friends. You're there to see your neighbors. You know, a lot of hams have moved. You know, they started off, let's say, in a city like Toledo, Ohio, and they've moved to Frankfort, Kentucky because of their jobs, you know, or they've moved to North Carolina somewhere, or somebody was in North or South Carolina, and now they've moved to Casper, Wyoming, you know, And so the people don't see each other nearly as much as maybe they used to. Dayton is one of those places that everybody sets aside, and everybody comes to Dayton during the Hamvention, and they see people they haven't seen in years. You know, and you see this. You know, you watch these little gatherings take place out in the hallways. You know, in places. You know, right in front of some vendor's booth or something. You know, and they'll all come together. Hey, how you doing this year? You know, and some of the meetings are planned. And some of the meetings are not. In other words, some of those meetings are just spontaneous. I mean, you're walking through, and a guy glances over and says, well, wait a minute, that's Fred, you know, and here you go. It's that right there in itself, to me, is a diamond, because this is something that, you know, in our society today, we are so busy. You know, people don't even set skeds up on HF to sit and talk to their old friends. They don't have time, you know, so... Dayton is one of those places where time gets frozen, and you kind of step out of the realm of today, and for that 2-day period, time freezes, and you have a chance to see old friends and neighbors and meet with people, and you know you see that somebody walking down in the flea market, you go, oh my God, there's so and so. Do you notice that?
Well, you know, I'm in a unique position being having been in a leadership role for a long time with the Dayton Amateur Radio Association as well as Hamvention. And I have made so many friends from all over the world. And I'll tell you what's interesting. There are people that come to me with major complaints, and we try to resolve it and work hard. And suddenly they become our friends. And I think that's the attitude of a lot of people that, you know, they understand we're trying to do the very best we can. But the other thing I want to mention, too, is that it goes beyond our own United States borders. We have, if you notice, how many people come from all over the world and meet their friends from other parts of the world. It's actually astounding now. And we, with our new international committee, we are trying to reach out to more and more of the international folks that come to Hamvention. And for me... personally, making friends, I was in Doha, Qatar a few times last year and meeting with my great amateur radio friends over there, even the prime minister and one of the prime ministers in Qatar, which is located right next to Saudi Arabia. He loves amateur radio, and he had me speak to a group of 800 young people who were going into technical degrees about amateur radio. Same in India. I've met friends in India, and they are very aggressively going after amateur radio, and it plays such an important part all over the world. But the neat thing about it, Ted, is that we're all brothers and sisters in this. I mean, it brings the world together. It brings we probably understand cultures quicker than the everyday person that doesn't have that communication, even with other parts in this country. But you're right, you know, Hamvention is just a warm time to meet people, and it's exciting. And you know, that's one of the things I tell people: when you come to Hamvention, make some friends, go to some of the activities, make some friends, and then you see these people year after year, and it becomes sort of that pilgrimage, you know, if you will, almost like the Mecca of amateur radio.
Well, you know, I guess I heard Alan Pitts, who has been the public relations manager for the ARRL. He came over and sat down at the booth, and he said, "You know, I can't remember what country it was, but he had worked some fellow overseas. Obviously, it sounded like pretty exotic. I don't know where, but it was and he said, well, we talked and we set up a sked. I guess he set up a sked with a fellow, talked to him two or three times on the radio, and it never dawned on him. He came to the Dayton Hamvention, and while he was standing there, he said, this gentleman walked up and said, hello there, I'm so and so. And I guess the thing is how many places can those kinds of things happen? You know, if you're on a net and you're talking to people and they're stretched out across the country, there's no other location that I know of that you would have the opportunity to meet so many of them in one spot. than the Dayton Hamvention. It just is. There's no other place that you could do that, at least in this half of the country. You know, and I guess the thing of it is I think one of the things that Dayton stands on, and that is the strength of the fact that it's been a long lived function every year. How far back does Dayton go? I mean, I know it goes past 70s or somewhere around the 70s. And when did it start? I don't even know.
Started in 1951.
There you go. See,
because
I remember my first Dayton was probably somewhere around 71, 72, something like that, you know. So I know when I came in 71, 72, it was huge, you know. I had never seen a flea market like that. So, and I knew it went back a ways. That longevity, though, I think builds into the Hamfest. A certain what I want to say, it's like a heritage thing. In other words, when you come to Dayton, you immediately get the sense that this thing's been around. You know, this is a proven, tried thing, and it's a piece of amateur radio history. You know, it's not just a Hamfest. You know, it represents so much more than that to the hobby, and that I think that's one of the things that makes it so special. Tell me now. I mean, how far back do you go with Dayton?
Oh, I think it's in the early 80s for me. So you actually go farther back than I do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I came to two of the Dayton Hamventions. I was not able to get to many more, but the two that I attended were back in the 70s, you know. And I can just tell you, I mean, to me, the first impression I had was the flea market was huge. Matter of fact, we used to have this saying. We said, if you can't find it at Dayton, it doesn't exist anymore. You know, so
that saying's still around.
So, but I guess since the 80s, let's talk just about the flea market area. Since the 80s, what changes have you noticed in terms of what appears there, what seems to have disappeared from the flea market? I mean, have you noticed things like that?
Well, I think that the flea market, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a great area to get good deals, but it's really a wonderful social area too. I think a lot of people, you know, you're walking through those aisles and you see people, you have different clubs from all over that'll have a space there. And, you know, you see a lot of equipment. I mean, the equipment is, if I can be honest, sometimes I see equipment go from one flea market site and then next year it's at another anywhere else and in large quantities as well. But it's almost like the, you know, in the flea market, it's like a spirit of I don't know how to describe that. I mean, that's a whole event in itself, the flea market, and people just love the flea market and moving through there and seeing people, and you never know what you're going to find. And when
ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the QSO Radio Show, and our special guest today is the official spokesman for the Dayton Hamvention 2013, Michael Coulter, W8CI. We'll be back with Michael right after this. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online. I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either, there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp judgment. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com. We want to thank you for listening to the QSO Radio Show. But we'd also like to remind you, it's so important that we hear from you. Please shoot us an email and say hello. Tell us where you're listening and what you're listening on. If you have a suggestion for a guest, be sure and mention that in your email and send it our way. You can do that by simply going to our website, and that's QSORadioShow.com. That's QSORadioShow.com or simply TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com. Look for the tab on the website that says Contact Ted and then send your email. Either that or you can email us direct at TedRandall@TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall, TedRandall@TedRandall.com. Mention on your email, I want to win, because we would like to make it worth your while for sending us an email, and we try to respond to as many as we possibly can. Also, you want to check out the streaming on the website. We have the QSO Radio stream that runs 24/7 with all the older QSO shows, along with Glenn Hauser's World of Radio, a very comprehensive broadcast that covers the entire gamut of shortwave broadcasting, something like you've never heard. If you're into propagation and shortwave listening, you're going to get hooked on this program. Plus, the very wonderful Amateur Radio Newsline. And we repeat these shows about 6 times a day. So regardless of what time you click on the stream, if you listen for a while, you're going to catch up on everything. We really appreciate you listening, and we'd like to also invite you to follow us on Twitter. And also friend us on Facebook. It's all under QSO Radio Show. Once again, thank you for listening to QSO. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the QSO Radio Show. And now back to our guest, the spokesman for the Dayton Hamvention 2013, Michael Coulter, W8CI.
The Hamvention opens. It's amazing how many people are back. As we get clearance from the our fire authorities to go ahead and let people in, it's amazing, you know, just people are rushing in there and finding great deals or just, yeah. But as far as the flea market, it kind of ebbs and wanes. Some years it's just really, really full, and other years it's not quite as full. But this year it's very strong, so we are excited about it, and we're trying to arrange some good weather this year like we've had the last few years as well.
You know, I guess I was told, like, who is it now, that the flea market is where hams go to visit their old equipment.
You know, I just love that, Ted. I'm going to remember that. That is perfect.
And it's true. I mean, you know, and you know what? It's terrible. This is awful. I mean, we live such horrible, busy lives. And it's not just me or you. It's everybody's like this, you know. And I've noticed I'll go through a flea market area, and I'll see something, and I'll say, oh, God, I want one of those. I need to get this. I need to get this. I'll probably never find another one like this, okay? So you you go over and you kind of haggle and you make the purchase of this thing, you know, that you feel that you absolutely have to have. And after you do that, you take it home and you find the place that you keep all the goodies. And there, lo and behold, on the shelf is one just like it that you forgot you had. Have you ever done that?
Ted, I'm guilty of that. I have actually gone through storage boxes that I had, you know, like a label, you know, amateur radio equipment, and I'll look in there and go, oh my God, I forgot about this radio. I forgot I had all these things. You know, it's a pleasant surprise, but at the same time, it's a little bit embarrassing. But I think that, you know, sort of an addiction that amateur radio operators develop after years of being in the hobby. And I recently went through my ham shack, which is in a very high portion of my house that overlooks countryside, and I took everything out of it because I had to. I put all new flooring in it, and it was a nice breath of fresh air to get a little bit more simplified and, you know, to lay it out ergonomically with the cables and everything the way I've always thought about doing it but never had the time. So, in terms of finding things and little jewels, oh, my gosh, I'm as guilty as anybody. And I bet a lot of people listening right now are probably chuckling going, oh, yeah, they got it right.
Well, yeah, just as an example, things that you can find at Dayton that you may not think about. If you've got an older rig, let's say like... Go ahead. Are you there? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't know all of a sudden you'd quiet.
You phased out for a minute and I was listening to you.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay, Ted?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I think that there's some amazing radio collections there. I mean, the Volder radios that you won't see anywhere else at all, collected in one place. And it amazes me when I see that stuff. And then some of the military surplus things that you don't see everywhere either. I mean, that's just small stuff compared to what catches people's eyes.
Well, what I was saying, if you have an older radio, say like a Drake line or a Drake TR-4C or something, those things require a very small microphone plug. I don't know what number it is, but you won't find that anywhere in a city where you live. It's just not there. You can't find them. You probably can find them online if you know what you're looking for. But with Dayton, it's interesting because you're walking past some display, you look down, and there's a guy who's got a whole box of them. You know, so you can buy a dozen of the things, you know, for $1.50 a piece. Now, I've heard people say, well, you know, when you go to these places on the flea market areas, the things are overpriced. Okay, well, but I found that not to be the case. Now, let me tell you, last year at Dayton, I have a soft spot in my heart for the old Johnson KW matchboxes. I love the things. They've been a top performer for me on HF. And I was strolling through the flea market, and I spied one, and I walked over, and I said, what do you want for this thing? And the guy said, $150. And I just looked at him. I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, no. He said, I've got two or three of them. He said, I just want to pass it along to somebody else. And I said, well, I could use one. I said, I got two sons that are hams, everything I have. So I said, we can use another KW matchbox. So, but before I bought it, I even told him, I said, well, these things usually go for right around $300, maybe $400 in some places. He said, oh, I know. He said, but I've got a couple of them. And he said, I don't have anything in this. I just want to share it with somebody. He said, $150. I said, okay. So what I'm saying is a lot of times there's guys out there selling things that for sentimental reasons or whatever, they're more interested in seeing that piece of equipment get in the hands of somebody that really wants it and wants to use it more than they are profiteering from the sale. And I found that all over the Dayton flea market area. Absolutely, it's weird, but it's something, you know, you don't see that much anymore.
Well, I think it's part of the brotherhood of amateur radio. And you want your good equipment to go to somebody who will take care of it, use it properly, maintain it, and then pass it along. I think that's a wonderful spirit of amateur radio.
Tell me about some of the sessions and things that will be going on. Now, you may not know the individual sessions this year that are planned, but talk a little bit about what folks can learn when they come to Dayton, the kinds of programs that's been there in the past, and what you've noticed about those.
A couple of things. I think it's important if people can get online at www.hamvention.org. And the website's pretty decent, and we try to keep it updated. And the forum information will be there. And kind of plan your days out if you can. And there's a lot of evening activities that go on with Hamvention. You know, maybe they're not necessarily sponsored by Hamvention, but all the different organizations and people meeting. And you can take a look at those and go, yeah, I want to go meet with these people. You know, and as past general chairman, I've tried to stop into many of these events. And, you know, the D-Star people meet somewhere, you know, the DXers meet. Yeah, just amazing amounts of people that have reserve, you know, rooms in restaurants or hotels for meetings. Now, during the actual hours of Hamvention, one of the things that we're having this year is the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Emergency Communications is going to provide some training this year. And all the information about that, you know, and the different certifications that you can receive from attending this, it's all listed and fairly well detailed out on our webpage. And so some of the course content, you know, they'll have, you know, Incident Communications Center, Incident Radio Communications Plan, intrastate and interstate radio networks, team management and accountability. Very detailed plan here of a class. So I would really urge people to take a look at the website. That will be a kind of a limited size. I think they'll allow 60 attendees as of now. So get on and look at that. Another thing that's happening is the a one-day technician class, amateur radio license course. So if you're listening out there on a shortwave and you really want to get into amateur radio and you come and want to get totally immersed, on Saturday of the Hamvention from 9 until 4, you'll get totally immersed in training and preparing for the technician class, and the exam then is at 4 o'clock. And that information is on the website. We are every year we do a we've been trying to do that. Group comes in and does a balloon launch from Hamvention, and that produces a lot of interest. And you can see some of the pictures that we've gotten of the Hamvention event itself from those pictures, right from the balloon. Those are just a few of the things, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you a little bit about some of the forums, if that'd be all right, Ted.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm anxious to find out about some of those myself. I never get to go because I'm always on the air, but I like to hear about them.
Well, I know you are, and but it's, you know, we have the forums are pretty much filled out and ready to go. So, well, you know what? I don't have them all. I don't see them all here right now. I'm having a little computer problems. But what we've had in the past, we have people from all different walks of amateur radio come in, and they're experts in their field. And just from when Hamvention, when the inside exhibits open until they close, we have four rooms there, forum rooms, and you can learn so many different things for amateur radio. It's just a tremendous opportunity. Meet people, get questions answered, you know, especially if you have you know, things in particular that you're looking for. So
now, different subjects. I mean, I know that 1 year, if you can recall this, one of the biggest controversies that had spanned several years, especially on radio shows like Coast to Coast AM, the Art Bell show, and a few, was the whole thing of HARP. HAARP was like, you know, it was destroying the weather, destroying the universe, and if you get bumps on the end of your nose, it's from HAARP, and I mean, it just went on and on and on. And then I looked at the schedule for Dayton, and lo and behold, the guy that's the head of the entire HAARP operation up there, I guess it's in Alaska is where they're at. I can't remember. I may have that wrong. Was there at Dayton in a forum, right, talking to everybody about HAARP. I didn't get to go. I wanted to go because they really do serve a specific purpose, and they're doing research and whatnot. And I thought that would have to be one of the most interesting forums because of amateur radio's love for propagation, obviously, for good reason. I thought that'd be a great thing. I've often wondered, did anyone ever record that? Because that would be an interesting rebroadcast, you know, on the QSO show.
That's a good point. I have to apologize. Our website did have the forums on it. I clicked on the wrong thing. So I do have some of the information here about that. But, yeah, the HAARP thing, I remember that controversy. And we try to have up-to-date, current good speakers, and we get inundated with people that want to speak. I will tell you, Bob Heil and Gordon and George Thomas, that they work a lot with Ham Nation and then Smoke and Solder. Of course, Ham Nation will be live this year again at Hamvention, and you know, those guys like you, Ted. They, and as you will be live there too. You know, all the great communication that comes out of Hamvention is just really tremendous, and keeping all of us aware of the cutting edge. I mean, it's so good to have people like you and Newsline folks and all the people that are putting out the news about amateur radio to all parts of the world. So before I go much farther, I wanted to thank you and Holly and the rest of your team for what you do for Hamvention and what you do for amateur radio, Ted. So, but I would like to talk to you a little bit more about forums. I do have the information.
No, we'd love to hear about it. Now, we enjoy doing what we're doing, but we do it primarily for the promotion of amateur radio. We don't really have a marketing side. We don't have an amateur radio related business or nothing. You know, we are the QSO radio show is just simply what we're trying to do is put together the most professional presentation on radio. And we believe in radio because we're on the air, we're on international shortwave on a powerhouse radio station, WTWW, just literally reaches the entire globe. And when Dayton is referred to as an international event, we like to think that we're responsible for taking it into corners and crooks of the world where people necessarily, maybe even humans, aren't even going there, you know. And we do get snail mail from those places where people don't have computers and they're listening, you know. And we hear these stories about them wanting to get their ham license, and some that have got into ham radio. So it's really a cool thing. Broadcasting over shortwave is a cool thing all to itself, but you know what? The seeds of that, the beginnings of that, are so deep seated in amateur radio, and amateur radio is so deep seated in HF that all of it goes hand in hand and works together. There's nothing more thrilling though than being at Dayton and having somebody come up to you from another country and say, "I listen to your radio show." That's, you know, because part 97, I bless it, but the amateur rules and regulations, one of the things that says the purpose of amateur radio is for the enhancement of international goodwill. And it says, you know, for a pool of technicians and all of that, but for the enhancement of international goodwill. I can't think of anything that can enhance international goodwill any more efficiently and productively than our hobby of amateur radio. And that's where Dayton comes in, because it all comes together at Dayton. Folks come in from all parts of the world, and the Hamvention has definitely turned into an international event. Now, this is also the place where guys go to these forums, and under one roof, outside of the weather and all that kind of stuff, and air conditioning, sit there and listen to and learn about technologies that I guess there's no substitute for sitting under the tutorship of an expert who can teach and talk and answer questions. And that is so key. So tell us about the forums, because that's, to me, that's one of the major things about Dayton. And, you know, other places, other hamfests have forums, but you don't ever hear people get excited about them. You know, I mean, we have people who come by the radio booth and say, oh, it's 2 o'clock. I got to get to the so-and-so forum. You know,
they get isn't that neat?
They get excited over these things. So tell us about the forums this year.
Well, they are listed on the website, and you know, we are going to have forums from Homeland Security training, working QRP, doing more with less tips, and how to do that. You know, we hear all this about QRP. How do we do it? And we got some experts, people that are real expert in that field. We have an instructors forum, people who want to teach people. And that's that forum. Carol Perry, who is very well known to amateur radio operators, will be running that forum. And one we're having this year is iOS and the Android rig control. And I'm looking forward to that because I just bought an Android, and I want to learn a little bit more how to use that thing. Fox hunting, kit building, understanding ham radio and the law. What is going on in the law right now, and what, you know, what can we do? what should we know? Antennas. Now there's a subject there. Antennas. You know, that's a really good thing to come and challenge some of these experts and learn from them. Or using amateur radio in the classroom. Power line interference. Techniques of the best operators. You know, what. What is a good technique? What are the what should an operator be doing? You know, and a lot of us that are older hams may be thinking, "Yeah, I know what I'm doing," but it's kind of nice to hear. You know, you might not know what you don't know, so coming to those kind of things is so helpful. County hunting, we'll be talking about that. We'll have youth forums. We're going to talk about Saturn, and that's a Salvation Army team, our emergency radio network. We'll be having the use of amateur radio at the National Hurricane Center, and that should be very interesting. And ARRL is going to have their member forum. There's going to be a forum on Drake equipment, another forum on getting started with antenna modeling. And AMSAT will be having a forum there. And I want to talk just for a second on a side issue about AMSAT. I mentioned that I was in Doha, Qatar, and they have a very aggressive amateur radio club there. And one of the things that they're really looking forward to is getting some kind of a satellite into space. Well, the Germans have a great satellite that will be in geosynchronous orbit, but they can't get it up there. So I kind of brought the two together. I bought the president of German AMSAT. I met him in Qatar, and now they're working together to figure a way to bring this. Okay, yes, Ted, the AMSAT in Germany has a great satellite ready to go. They want to put in geosynchronous orbit, and the Qatar folks want to get much more involved in with AMSAT. And so I arranged to have the gentleman from the president of AMSAT in Germany come and meet with the people in Doha, Qatar, and I was there with them. And now they're working together to figure out how to put this satellite into space. And the reason that we couldn't do that with Americans is because of our ITAR regulations, and Germany had no problem with that. So let's move on to the some of the other forums that we're having. We're having one on RIDI contesting. You know, on FCC and amateur radio enforcement, and we'll be talking about embedded Linux and microcontrollers for ham radio projects, and we'll have a DX forum. And I want to say something about the Southwest Ohio DX Association. They're very well known, and they have a big event there. They have a big meal there as well. And I know they're from the Ohio region, but they're very well thought of. And when I was in Germany in Friedrichshafen this last summer, they were recognized there as well. So they're having a very interesting DX forum, and I suggest anybody interested in that take a look at it. We're having a Mars forum and a fast scan amateur radio television forum on that. DXing with DX Lab, and that's better DXing with software, is how they've labeled that. And here's a great one. Collecting and restoring ham radios of the past, and bicycle mobile, digital mobile radio, QCWA, the forums that will be there, Ted. So that's quite a few things to choose from in that time frame. So,
I guess with
are you there, Ted?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Sorry.
We have with the forums though. There are so many, and so many are varied. I think that sometimes that a person can kind of get lost. In other words, it'd be a good idea to go to the website and look all these things over and look at the times when they're having them and the days, and kind of plan ahead. Because if you just walk into Dayton and think, well, what are some of the forums, you know? Yeah, chances are you may have missed the one you wanted to see already, you know. So plan ahead, look into that schedule and find out where they're at, what part of the arena they're in, and what time, and who's conducting it, and all that sort of thing. Because it can pass you by real quick. It's happened to me. I mean, I walked in and said, you know, I want to go to the so-and-so forum. And then a friend of mine says, oh, that was 2 hours ago. You know, it's like, oh, man, you know what? So planning ahead is a big thing with Dayton. Let's talk about hotel accommodations and parking and all that kind of thing. Because a lot of folks worry about those things. They worry about parking and walking and all that. So tell me a little bit about that side of the story.
Okay. Once again, we are trying to really ramp up our website with all the travel and accommodation information on our website. And we can even give you the local gas prices, GPS information, bus service and pass information. We do have a limited amount of ADA and handicap parking. What we try to do, and there's even, you know, information on camping, directions from everywhere, area repeaters, and these site, you can click on any one of this, one of these topics on our website and get lots of useful information. Now, there is a parking at a mall down the road, and we provide the bus service and for a nominal fee to get back and forth to the event, drops you right off at the front door. And for those of you who may be walking a lot, we have scooters running from around Hera. We don't run through the flea market if it's very crowded, but we'll run outside and we help people with big loads and at least get them to near where the bus is or near where the parking is across the street. And if you want, if you need special handicap parking, please do get that arranged ahead of time. That's really important. But if you're looking for a place to stay, it's all the information is on our website. And I personally did a talk this year with all our hotel motel operators in a big meeting that they had about Hamvention, and they are eager and ready to serve all of our visitors. So it just don't wait to the last minute to make reservations, because that becomes important. And you may want to take a look at some of the hotels provide some shuttle service to the Hamvention and some don't. But, you know, a lot of people drive in, some people fly in. But all that information, Ted, is clearly laid out, we think, on our website.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Right now, at this point in time, how booked are the hotels and motels for and near the Hera Arena at this point in time? I mean, are we getting to the point where things are starting to fill up already, or do people still have plenty of time to call and make reservations?
Right now begins the peak time for a lot of people who kind of, okay, I'm going to go to Dayton this year, and I better make my reservations. So right now, I'd say right through April, things start crowding out, and the better hotels fill up pretty quick. So there's still room. Absolutely, there's still room, but don't wait.
Well, I remember folks coming in RVs and camping and doing all those kind of things. Does that still go on?
Yeah, we have a lot of people. There's a KOA that people use, and there is on our travel and accommodations, travel and parking section of our website, we have camping sites listed. And so you can have all these different places to go to and call and make your application and get your spots reserved. I believe there's a KOA campsite, and that will be listed where that's at. It's up on Interstate 70. And a bus station provided, bus service provided there. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, why don't you talk a little bit about this youth program they have? When they say bring the kids, I mean, they mean bring the kids. Because they have one of the most fantastic things going on in regards to amateur radio. If you've ever wanted to get your children interested in the hobby, this may be the trick. Tell us a little bit about who does it and how it's set up and all that sort of thing. Because I know my grandchild is lost for 2 days over there with a soldering iron, and I don't know what else they're doing. He comes back to the booth, to grab money to go get something to eat, and he runs right back to whatever it is that y'all have him doing over there.
Well, I will say that's in conjunction with the Amateur Radio Relay League, the ARRL, but it has been a big hit where kids come, they build radios, they go to forums that are designed for the young people, and we've designed them in such a way that the first few years, it appeared to be we were talking down to the kids. And I remember talking to some of them. And now they really like it because they're treated like, hey, I've got a mind here. I can make this happen. And so they really get into learning how to solder. And there's tables and tables of young people working to build these kits. And when a young person builds maybe a crystal radio or whatever they're building, and then suddenly it works, their eyes just light up, and it is an amazing thing. And you can really kickstart a young person's career, maybe in a technical field, and awaken them by doing that. So I know in conjunction with the ARRL, we feel that that's a very, very important aspect of amateur radio and of hamvention.
When does it go on? Like, for example, in terms of the time period, the days, and I'm just curious. Do you know the person that kind of heads that up?
No, but all you need to do is just go over there to the ARRL area, and you'll see them. And they have different people who coordinate the activities. I don't know the exact person who's in charge of that, but they are so friendly there. And you don't have to be an ARRL member or anything to be part of that. It's we along with ARRL believe that the youth is the key, and so they've got this thing going, and it's just wonderful. It's the best I've seen at any Hamfest that I've been across the world. So
I'm just curious, and I don't know how technical you people get, but have you ever looked at the demographic of the people that are coming to Dayton? And if so, are the numbers skewing younger than they used to, possibly?
I think that we see a lot more. Well, let me answer the question. Looking at the demographics is just basically looking around and seeing who's moving through. And, there's a lot of controversy on that just the old guys that are getting older. But we're seeing a lot more younger women getting involved in it, younger girls, younger women. And I have found that to be a phenomenon that's happening across the world. But it's important to us to make it interesting and exciting. And why would it be exciting? I know when I was a kid building a night kit R55A receiver. I saved my money, and it was summer, and I was down at my dad's workshop in the basement, and I had shorts on and, you know, be soldering, and this solder would drip on my legs, and I'd get these burns. I still have the scars from them. But I remember how much fun I had when I got that thing going. So, but I'm seeing a lot more younger people involved, but I don't have the actual demographics, Ted.
Well, what I noticed, and that is just sitting in a booth, you know, and you're so you get to watch the people going by, you know, and I'm seeing a lot of younger folks at Dayton. When I say younger folks, I mean, I'm talking about people in their 20s and 30s. It isn't just the 40 and 50 crowd and the 60 crowd and above. The numbers have become much more, I guess I want to say, salted in with people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. I mean, I see an abundance of them, not just a few. And I hear once in a while, people say things like, well, you know, it's an aging crowd. Well, it may be, but what I'm seeing at Dayton is there's a whole lot of interest, evidently, in the younger crowd. Now, I've noticed that another thing, too, and I want to talk about this, I've noticed that a lot of other amateur radio events and functions in terms of hamfests have dwindled, and they're starting to blow away, I think. Some of them are going away. Some of them are down to the point where if you went to the one last year, you know, and you saw how sparse the crowd was, you really don't feel that encouraged about going back again this year. And see, that's the point that I want to make, and that is that's not the case with Dayton. Dayton is still growing, and it's getting bigger. Every year we go through, the numbers grow. I could tell a difference between last year and the year before, just watching the crowd. I think there's a lot of reasons for this, and let me kind of get into that. When you come to the Dayton Hamvention, you're dealing with a bunch of guys that's been doing this for a long time. They know what will work, and they know what will be a disaster. So they stay away from the disasters, and they stay with what will work. One of the things I've noticed about the smaller ham fests, and that is, especially here in the South, they want to get these things going at like 6 a.m., and there's older guys that show up with flashlights before the sun comes up, you know, and they rummage through the flea market, and everybody does what they want to do, and by 10 o'clock in the morning, they're all ready to pack up and go home, and they do. So if you're going to travel any distance at all, you know, it's like I get upset. I'm like, what is this all about, man? They didn't have time to cook any hamfest hot dogs. I mean, it's over. 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, these guys are packing up and leaving. That's why these little hamfests don't make it anymore, because they're not managed correctly. They're not run correctly. And I guess my advice is, from the QSO standpoint of the radio show, I'm the official spokesman, I would say, you know what? Plan on going somewhere where you're going to have a good time. Plan on going somewhere where people know what they're doing, so that when you make the investment in a hotel room, you make the investment in your time to travel to this place, you know that when you get there, there's people that really care about the Hamfest, that care about the function, that care about the Dayton Hamvention, they care about the hobby. That when you come to this event and you're placing yourself kind of in their hands, that you don't have to worry, because these guys all have the best interest in the whole thing at heart, you know. And I guess if you've been to smaller events and you've been disappointed, then forget about them and make way to Dayton this year, because this is where you're going to never have that kind of an experience. You know, you're gonna come, you're gonna have a good time. You're going to learn things, meet people, see old friends, and so on and so forth. I don't know. Now, you've been around this thing a long time, Michael. Tell me what it is that you think makes the Hamvention a success in terms of the experience that a person has when they come to the Hamvention.
You know, I may answer it wrong, but I'm just going to give my opinion, is that I think it is just such a magnificent event for amateur radio that covers so many facets of amateur radio, that brings so many people together, you know, be it the FCC, bringing so many clubs together, trying to bring the youth in. It is a hub. I mean, it is a mecca and a hub for amateur radio in the world. And we recognize that at Hamvention, not that we are doing anything better than any other club could do, but that we have a legacy. And we feel that legacy is important for us to hold up our pillar, our duty to amateur radio. And that's how all our volunteers see it, that we want to put our best foot forward to make it a momentous event, you know, where we try hard to make everybody feel at home. And then that puts everybody in a good spirit when things kind of run decently. And, you know, let's face it, an event like that, things are going to happen and people are going to be upset about this and this. But boy, we try to fix it as very best we can. But by and large, you know, when people step back and look at, wow, these are all volunteers doing this. And it's just a magic. And even Dave Sumner from the ARRL in his little editorial after the Hamvention last year, he also thought that there was kind of a magic there. And he spoke to me a couple times about it's hard to describe the magic of Hamvention and the magic of the technology, much like I remember when I was a kid, the very first time I was tuning around on a shortwave band thinking, wow, what are those sounds? Who are those people? You know, what is this secret coded message? And I go from one end to another, back and forth again. And then you begin to try to figure out the science of the unseen, you know, communication, the unseen radio waves, you know, the electronics and the electricity that flows through the radio. And how can I understand it? How can I get to it? And that brings all that magic together, and the magic of communication. And that's what we do at, I think, what happens at Dayton. It's a great time to communicate with each other, communicate with our friends, communicate with people all over the world. I don't know, it's very hard to describe. I hope that I'm getting somewhat close to it, but go ahead.
Well, you know, here's something that I don't want to overlook, and this is a major thing. You know, most hams have a subscription to QST, or they've been online to websites and they see the little ads for different things, you know, and they're looking for a transceiver, a radio, an amplifier, antenna tuner, an HT, who knows what, you know, some sort of a digital device. Well, they go to Dayton. And let's just use Martin Jew in the MFJ booth as an example. You know, you get this catalog from him. You know, this is like the old Radio Shack or Olsen catalogs or those things of the past.
Yeah.
That we used to get, you know. And you start thumbing through this thing, and you go, they got a what? Now this thing does what? What does this do? You know, and it's real intriguing. Well, then you come to a place like Dayton. Of course, now MFJ products are located in many different booths because, you know, Martin obviously has all these dealers or whatnot. But you walk over to his booth, and everything that's in that catalog, for the most part, is in that booth. And you can walk up to this thing, and you can look at it. Three-dimensional, right there live. Pick it up, hold it in your hands, turn it around, look at the top, the bottom, the sides, and you say, wow, that's what this thing looks like. You know, this is because pictures they don't do what what it does. You know, so as you walk through the arena, you walk through those areas where the vendors are set up, and you get a chance to firsthand eyeball all this equipment. And there's more there under one roof than any place I've been. I don't care what you're looking at. I mean, you go by DX Engineering. You go by MFJ, you go by Tentec, you go by Flex Radio, you know. And all these people are standing around asking questions. Why? Because, you know, their reps are right there, you know, and it's hands-on. Kenwood, Yaesu, everyone's there. And all the radios are there. And you can see exactly what they look like. You can put your hands on them. You can turn the knobs and watch the displays change, you know. And the only thing that I think is missing at Dayton when it comes to things like that is you guys don't supply drool cups.
I like that. That's good.
But it's true. I mean, you know, because you can, there's no other place you can go and do that. I mean, you can even visit an amateur radio store somewhere, and you can't. You'll never, never even approach seeing all these different items, you know. And you know what a temptation that is, walking into an amateur radio store that sells gear, you know. So I don't know. I mean, I would very, very much advise folks to save nickels and dimes for the entire year. Go to Dayton, you know, with a little cash in hand, and even if you don't make a purchase at Dayton, you can at least see the things. I mean, and you know, I think a lot of times, you know, you think you want something, and then you see the rig or whatever it is in person, and say, well, you know what, I don't know, that isn't exactly what I thought it was. But at least you were able to see it live, face to face, nose to nose. And there's other things, too, when you're strolling by the a place like, and I'll just use the MFJ booth. You all of a sudden, there'll be something sitting there, and you've actually seen it in the catalog before, but you really didn't notice it, didn't know what it was. And all of a sudden, now that little device comes to life, and you realize, I can't live without one of these, you know. So, and that's true of the whole, I mean, the whole area is you're going in with all these vendors that are out there that are, that have brand new stuff that they're making, manufacturing, whether it be an antenna, a linear amplifier, or some accessory. I was really intrigued by the booths that are set up there that sell kits. You know, you can go buy a little kit. And I hear so many people say, boy, it just isn't the same since Heathkit hasn't been around. But, you know, the joy of building a kit doesn't necessarily come from a big project like building a transceiver. The joy from building a kit can be from a kit that's just something, you know, simple, something that is useful in the shack or some piece of technology. But there's several booths there that have kits. I mean, all kinds of them. I mean, things that, you know, I was looking at the list. It was mind boggling, you know. So those things, I think, being able to experience all of that hands on, you know, under one roof, is phenomenal. Of course, now the flea market area, you know, that's a whole science in itself, you know.
Yeah, it is.
there's so many items. I mean, and for someone like myself, if you're ADD, then I would suggest you go out and look at, you know, cordon it off and say, okay, I'm going to look only here right now, you know, and scour that area and then move on to another area. Because if you just start strolling through the flea market and you're ADD, you'll overload. You know, you'll wind up with a migraine. There's just so many things out there. And I think some of the most unusual things I saw, I had a radio broadcast transmitter, an AM broadcast transmitter out there on the back of a trailer. And I've seen, you'll see medical equipment, you know, like EKG machines. You'll see computers. I mean, computer parts there's all kinds of things out there. And then radio gear, old radio gear, stuff that was built in the 50s and so on and so forth that you just don't really see anywhere else. It's all there. And it's just quite amazing. But I'm going to ask a question. How many actual commercial dealers wind up in the flea market? I mean, I see them out there. And sometimes it's difficult to tell the difference, you know, because a lot of guys that have been in ham radio a long time will come and set up in the flea market, and they're very organized. They've got organized bins of parts and things like that, but they're not really a dealer. They're just another guy like you that's that's managed to collect all this stuff, and they're trying to get rid of it. Do you have any kind of feel for that at all?
No, but I will tell you, I don't have the exact numbers, and to give you real data, but there are dealers that some of them will have a place inside and a place outside, and some of them just prefer to be outside. They like the crowd. They do well out there, and it maybe their overhead isn't, you know, it's a little bit cheaper to be outside than it is inside, and they, I don't know, maybe they've calculated they do better outside. I don't know, but there is a mix of them now. There's there's dealers that enjoy being outside. you know, it's a little bit risky at times, but the last few years we haven't had much rain, and you know, we're trying to make arrangements for that not to happen this year as well, or only at night. So,
Well, yeah, but you know, even in the flea market area, a lot of these guys set up. They set up canopies. I mean, you'll see sometimes you're walking alongside, it's canopy after canopy after canopy, you know, so they're ready. I mean, if it comes down a drizzle or it starts raining, and of course, you know, I've never seen, I don't know, has there ever been a Dayton where it just rained the whole time through the whole ham fest? Or I've never seen that. It's always been, if it blows in, we'll get a little rain, then it goes away.
You know, we used to do it in April, and it seemed like when we did it in April, yeah, we really had a lot more risky time with the weather. Now that we've moved it to May, which we did some years back, it's been a lot more favorable for us weather-wise and temperature-wise. And so you never know if you're going to need sunscreen or you're going to need an umbrella or both. But, you know, the rains in around here, it's Ohio, and the weather changes rapidly. But, boy, when it's nice in May, it's just beautiful. You can't ask for anything better here. So.
Now, I want to do one thing here, and that is this. It probably goes through the minds of a lot of folks. Maybe. I would tend to think so. And that is, what makes a guy like Michael Coulter tick? I mean, you've been with the Dayton Hamvention now, you said, going back to the 80s. This is an all-volunteer organization. So there's something that makes you come back year after year after year. But let's go, because you're talking about shortwave radio and when you were a kid. I want you to get back into time here, and I want you to talk about the beginnings, the time that you first got into amateur radio, the first time you ever knew there was such a thing. How did all that happen, and what was it that was the spark plug to get you going down this road?
Well, when I was a young man, young kid really, probably 10, 12 years old, one of my neighbors, he had a shortwave radio. And so he turned it on one time, and I was hooked from that moment on, just absolutely thrilled with it. And I'd always bug him, hey, can I go listen to your radio? Nah, let's do something else. And I never could get him as interested as I was. And so then I was talking to my family and, you know, my aunts and uncles and grandparents. Hey, save me your radios. You got an old radio, give it to me. And I'd be messing, you know, did I get shocked plenty? Oh, yeah, I shocked myself. I'd, you know, save up my money and would, you know, subscribe to different electronics magazines. And just the magic of it. And then watching somebody get on 6 meters for the first time and chatting, I just thought, wow, this is just so magic. And then as getting into Hamvention, and then when I went to that event, and it was like, boy, this is more electronics than I had ever seen, more radio, more anything. And I became very hooked, and hooked in a way that I saw the importance of Hamvention, and I saw the importance of what we do. And I like what our club does, the Dayton Amateur Radio Association. We weren't always all volunteer. We used to have a paid show person that took care of all the events. Well, it came to mind that this was not working for us, and we had to take this guy to court. That's a whole nother long story, and we took it completely over ourselves at that time. But the exciting thing about what we do now with and I don't think a lot of people really recognize this, and I really want to make this point, is that the money that we make from Hamvention, yeah, we spend some on our club, but we have at our website, you know, you can ask for a grant if you're a club that's in trouble, been hit by a bad storm. Sometimes we make grants to help other clubs. We donate a significant amount of money to organizations in amateur radio that use it to expand the hobby. And that's important to us. And we put a lot of money into scholarships, a lot of money in scholarships that so we can keep supporting young people in the amateur radio field. But as for me, it's a sickness, I guess, and I just love radio. I and And I will tell you this, you know, I have five children, and my oldest daughter got her, she's an electrical engineer, and then she got her master's at Purdue, but when she was growing up, and she majored in communications and has done a lot in space communications and now works for the North American Space Intelligence Center or something like that. And at any rate, she's not an amateur radio operator yet. But, you know, when she grew up, I had all these wires going on and all these experiments I was doing. And I think a little bit of that rubbed off on her. But, yeah, I don't know how to explain it, Ted. Same with you. You love radio. You still do. And how do you get that? How does that get out of your blood? How did it get into your blood? Maybe there's something in our DNA. But actually, since I'm not quite as busy not being general chairman this year, and just, you know, I the awards chairman and the official spokesperson, I've been able to get back and enjoy radio more again. I'm just absolutely loving it. Just put up a new tower and refurbishing, like I mentioned, my whole shack. So it's still there after all these years. So well, I'd like to ask that question of you, Ted.
Well, I'm going to ask this question of you, though, because, I mean, I want to put some names and faces and personalities along with the Dayton Hamvention, because I want folks to feel like when they come there, they know a few of you guys. They know a little bit about your background and why you do what you do. But let me ask this question. Tell me the story of when you first got your license, how all that came about, because everybody has their first amateur radio license story, and I want to hear yours.
Well, I had always been, as a young boy, I've always been interested in amateur radio, and I studied for my license test. That's back when you take the novice, but I had a hard time finding people to, an Elmer, and I lived kind of in a rural area, but I still continued, you know, modifying radios, and then when I got into a professional career, you know, I ended up getting a master's degree in management, but I started in electrical and electronic repair, and I remember getting, you know, raising a family, and then back in the late 80s, I was getting very interested in it, and I was a volunteer firefighter in medical rescue, and I can remember there was a plane crash near my house and out where I live even now, and we couldn't find the plane. We knew it was down, and it's such a rural area, it was very hard to find, and we found one of the survivors came stumbling out. And I was frustrated because I couldn't make contact with the helicopter above. I wanted him to turn the lights on so I could, you know, let him know where I was at. So when we got to that crash, there were two very small children, one about 2 years, another maybe 3 years rather, another one 18 months. And so I was doing rescue breathing with one of the infants for a long time until they could get the baby, you know, so we could bring more people back. But what happened is that I was so distraught. That baby ended up passing away that I had to do something. So I decided, you know, I'm going to finally get this radio license. And so I got that done and just been completely into it ever since. As a matter of fact, I did my I got an extra class, and that's back with the 20 words a minute. I did it in less than 3 months, you know, from my first license to my extra class. And not that I'm really smart, but it just was a passion for me. So that's sort of my story.
Well, that, you know, that's interesting because you see your motivation for this is, I guess I want to say, very, very much steeped in public service. And, you know, how can we reach out to other people, and how can we do something for the community that nobody else can do? How can we be... how can we serve in a position that's open or lacking, or where there is no service at all when when there's a time of need? So that, to me, that's a very impressive story. I mean, that's like, you know, you were driven really literally to do this because of experiences that you had. And that's really quite incredible. I'm curious now, though, when you do get on the ham bands, and you do operate, where do we find Michael Coulter? Where is WHCI? What band are you on? What really flips your switches?
Well, I like 20 meters a lot. I like 40 meters. You know, I do a lot of listening, and you know, when I'm working around my office. But actually, I'm a little bit of a shy person. I love getting on and chatting, but my brother KB8OCP. I mean, he's been bugging me to get into more contesting, and and he's helped me a lot with you know, my station. But I enjoy you know, 20 meters and 40 meters. Quite a bit. I do want to add one other thing to that story, Ted, is that I really ended up then I became an elected official in our region and ended up being president of what we call the Miami Valley Emergency Management Authority, the EMA branch, if you will, for a two-county area, including Dayton and some of the surrounding areas. And because of that, I was able to push the amateur radio agenda a little bit. So when we'd have our directors got very involved, and a lot of them got licensed. And I remember different storms would come up. They'd be calling me on the phone. Now, what frequency do I need to get on right now to monitor? So, you know, that was another little side bar that I was able to push into in this community illegally. But getting back to your original question, I like 20 meters, 40 meters. I just love tuning around wherever. And I like, you know, both working HF. I work in anywhere from, you know, 70 watts up to maybe 800 watts. And I like dipoles. I like putting dipoles high into the air. But I have a nice tower, about 80-foot tower. With was it the A4S Cushcraft on it, and the Yaesu. I use a FT2000 is my favorite radio right now, and I have some of the you know, the DMU attachment with it, and I use the Heil headphones. I've really simplified my station instead of having so many radios in the one place, and I do have an emergency setup out in my barn that can run completely free of electricity, and I keep that ready and at the call. And I have an emergency outbox that, you know, I keep a FT100 in and all the gear that I need, a good dipole to go ahead and string and get on the air rather quickly. So you know, that's sort of, I'm a simple amateur radio operator, but I love it.
Well, are you mostly voiced? You do CW. What's your, what choice?
I like voice. I like code, but I'd rather do voice because, just for me, I like talking to people when I do talk to them, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the, you know, just, I don't know how to describe it. I like voice better.
Well, I like to hear the inflection in people's voices because not just the words they say, but the way they say it, the inflection and the emphasis that they place in terms of the way they pace words and all that kind of stuff. There's a story behind that that goes along with whatever story they're telling, you know, and it kind of changes the pitch of things, you know. And a good example of that is the the hornet's nest that can come up around emails. You can send an email to someone with totally good intentions, and they get it, and they read it a different way, and boy, they're just ready to come after you, you know. So the voice, though, that very seldom happens, you know, in voice communication. So there's something to be said about that. Now, one thing I did want to ask you about is tell me a little bit about the guys you work with. You know, with Dayton, give us a few names and tell us a little bit about these people, the folks that are behind the organization, that are behind Hamvention. When we come to Hamvention, these are the fellows that have been working behind the scenes.
Well, it's fellows and gals. I mean, no, we have men and women, so I got to be clear on that one. I would say that Charles is our new general chairman. And Charles Heiser, KDA-JZR, and he was my assistant last year. And you know, his picture is on the web page. Look him up and say hi to him. He's a very personable guy, and he's really moving into. He's been behind the scenes running committees, and that's generally where we get our good leaders. We just don't find somebody who's new to Hamvention. These people have good leadership skills. Laura is She runs our awards committee, and Laura is got over $80,000 in – I mean prize committee rather. Got over $80,000 in prizes last year, and her goal is to exceed that this year, and she's working hard at that. Our president this year is Don Dubon, and he's a – he's a DXer. He's been around the world, many, many countries DXing. He loves amateur radio. And then, of course, Jim Simpson is a voice of Hamvention and Dara for many years, and he's a past general chairman, and he's involved. It's hard to give all the people I don't want to leave somebody out. We have Dr. Kelly Hall, Kilo One, Lima, Lima Yankee, and she's our international rep, and she works to coordinate people coming from all over the world, along with Bill Weiner. They work together for that there. And we have a lot of people behind the scenes who just you probably would never see their faces, but they're just working so hard to make everything happen. Of course, all of our elected officials are around. Now, this year we'll be wearing green shirts, the green Hamvention shirts, and those are the people, when you see them, they are the people, the committee chairs, and if you see any of them and you have any words for them, good or bad, please tell them and let us know how we're doing.
Well, I know you're going to leave the names out of a few people, and they're going to listen to this and say, well, he didn't think of me, you know, but what the point of me asking is this. And that is, I want folks that come to the Dayton Hamvention or even plan on coming to understand that these are guys just like you are. They're somebody that's just like you that's volunteering their time. Nobody's perfect, but they're all trying very hard. But they all have an avid interest in this hobby. You know, whether it be DX or AM phone or VHF or satellites or whatever, you know, they're wrapped up in the hobby, and they're interested in promoting the hobby, and they're also interested in you coming and attending the Hamvention and you having a good time and learning something and having a great experience at Dayton. And I just want folks to know who some of these names are, some of the, who the people are. But now let me move on, because every year at Dayton there's awards, and I don't know if you have a list of what's going on this year. But if you do, I'd like for you to share that with us. Talk a little bit about it. What awards are there that Dayton gives out each year?
All right. We give out a new one that I thought was important, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, is the Club of the Year. And that's an important, to me, that's an important function of amateur radio, are the clubs. You know, to work solo is one thing, but to work as a club together, you know, in an emergency, in good times and bad times, public service, it's a club that really makes it happen. And if you look throughout the world, especially in poorer places in the world, it's where the amateurs come to get on the air, is at their clubhouse, because they may not be able to afford to have a station at their own location. And lots of clubs have great stations. And this year, our Club of the Year is the West Palm Beach Amateur Radio Group in West Palm Beach, Florida. Now, it's pretty hard to sift through who is actually going to win. And so this particular group, they do so many things right, and we try to verify it. We get online, and we're doing a lot of search, and of course, we look at the nominations. And we look at what would put them out in front. But the West Palm Beach group has a they monitor, or they man, if you will, an amateur radio station at I think it's a Southern Florida museum 7 days a week, and they're working with young people or people of all ages demonstrating amateur radio, and we. We just couldn't believe that, 7 days a week. That's extreme dedication. So that's our Club of the Year winner.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the QSO Radio Show. And our special guest today is the official spokesman for the Dayton Hamvention 2013, Michael Coulter, W8CI. We'll be back with Michael right after this. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online. I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either, there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com. We want to thank you for listening to the QSO Radio Show. But we'd also like to remind you, it's so important that we hear from you. Please shoot us an email and say hello. Tell us where you're listening and what you're listening on. If you have a suggestion for a guest, be sure and mention that in your email and send it our way. You can do that by simply going to our website, and that's QSORadioShow.com. That's QSORadioShow.com, or simply TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com. Look for the tab on the website that says Contact Ted, and then send your email. Either that or you can email us direct at TedRandall@TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall, TedRandall@TedRandall.com. Mention on your email, I want to win. Because we would like to make it worth your while for sending us an email, and we try to respond to as many as we possibly can. Also, you want to check out the streaming on the website. We have the QSO Radio stream that runs 24/7 with all the older QSO shows, along with Glenn Hauser's World of Radio, a very comprehensive broadcast that covers the entire gamut of shortwave broadcasting, something like you've never heard. If you're into propagation and shortwave listening, you're going to get hooked on this program. Plus, the very wonderful Amateur Radio Newsline. And we repeat these shows about 6 times a day. So regardless of what time you click on the stream, if you listen for a while, you're going to catch up on everything. We really appreciate you listening, and we'd like to also invite you to follow us on Twitter. And also friend us on Facebook. It's all under QSO Radio Show. Once again, thank you for listening to QSO. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the QSO Radio Show. And now back to our guest, the spokesman for the Dayton Hamvention 2013, Michael Coulter, W8CI.
Our Technical Excellence Award this year was shared by two gentlemen, Dave Witten and David Rowe. Dave Witten, KD0 EAG, and Dave Rowe, VK5DGR, and Dave is from Australia. But they have a free DV program that encodes high-quality HF digital voice in 1.125 kilohertz or less, and that's less than a half a bandwidth of a single sideband QSO. And they've done a lot of work there. As a matter of fact, Dave Rowe, I found out, won a technical award from ARRL for his work as well. So we're really excited to have these two gentlemen win the Technical Excellence Award. Now, our Amateur of the Year award went to Mustafa Landulsi, Delta Lima 1, Bravo Delta Foxtrot. And Mustafa's an interesting guy. He's been instrumental in promoting amateur radio all over the world. He's a retired pilot who worked for Lufthansa Airlines. He's fluent in Arabic, French, German, and English. And really worked hard in assisting in promoting the development of amateur radio in the Middle East. And he also organized delivery of emergency medical equipment and medicine to African countries. And he does work tirelessly to bring amateurs together in the Middle East and Africa and many other parts of the world. And he's won many awards for his numerous contributions. So we're glad to have Mustafa join the ranks of Amateur of the Year. But those are the four awards that we give. And, boy, I'll tell you what, Ted, that's tough going through that. And it's tough narrowing those kinds of things down from our nominations. So that's our award winners this year.
Well, you know, every year goes by, you folks pick a different group of folks. And what amazes me is it's like when you make the announcement, it's like somebody that you wouldn't even think. And yet when you begin to learn about that individual, you realize what an impact that they've had on the hobby. So how do you guys research this? How do you come up with this? Because you really do pick the winners. And I wonder, how do you arrive at the, at all these different awards that you come up with, like Amateur of the Year and so on and so forth?
Well, that's a really good question, Ted. I mean, we take the nominations and we go one by one and we study them. And we have a one of the guys has a in his place of business, he's got a great big screen, and we might be on two or three screens, you know, comparing information and looking things, trying to double check to see if things look right. And we'll get on websites. We try to research people out the very best we can. But one of the things that we look at is their work, is it making a difference to the world of amateur radio, and how many people does it affect? You know, does it affect lots of people in a very positive way? Even in the Technical Excellence Awards, you know, the fact that these guys have done this work and they've given it away. They give away their technology. That's huge, and they're not selling it. And you know, some of the Special Achievement Award. How do you decide who wins that? And you have to look at, you know, the rule of thumb is, you know, who are they really affecting? How many people? And is it really changing the hobby a little bit more? Is it making things a little bit better? And it's very difficult, but we sort of put that matrix together. And there's a lot of wrangling in the awards meeting, but we all come to grips with, you know, it's a democratic process. We all have to understand it. If somebody says no, well, we have to listen. Why not? What are you seeing? And sometimes that one no is, you know, to put us somebody else in that place. But yeah, we realize the impact of this, kind of like the academic award or the Academy Awards of amateur radio. So yeah, it's a good question, a very good question.
Well, you know, I've wondered now. You could create a category that would be like the Amateur Radio Nutcase of the Year, you know, and then you could nominate folks like myself or some of our mutual friends that are in this hobby that have very, very twisted senses of humor and all that sort of thing. Anyways, that's
well, you know, were you self-nominating, Ted?
I mean, all these different categories and whatnot. One thing that I will say that makes it cool, and that is this has a very, very human side to it. You know, in other words, each and every one of these people are I mean, they're once again, you know, they're people just like you, the people that are listening, you know, and they've devoted a lot of time and effort and energy. And you kind of wonder, I mean, their stories are what makes them interesting. If you sit down and talk to them and you find out what motivates them, it gets pretty exciting. I mean, it really does, because some of the folks, I mean, there's all sorts of, it's just like with your story, if I had not asked you, you know, I would have never known of the story of Michael Coulter and the airplane crash. I mean, that's just, you know, these things are priceless, and everyone has something that turns their crank, that makes them do what they do or motivates them to do what they do. I had an interview I did with Bill Pasternak, and I know you know Bill. He, of course, is the, I guess, the driving force behind Amateur Radio Newsline each and every week. And they just do a phenomenal job of pooling information in regards to what's going on inside of amateur radio. It's just amazing. And we run it on our QSO 24 hours a day, 7 days a week stream. I think it runs four times a day on that stream. May run six, I don't know, because it's, I mean, you could run it 10 times a day. It wouldn't matter. You know, people really love it. But Bill has this story about when he was in New York, and his mother was very sick, and I think she eventually, you know, wound up passing away, but he had to keep very strange hours and whatnot. And he was coping with some depression and whatnot, but the guys on 6 meters in New York where he was at and operating, they kept him going, you know. And when the tragedy passed and he got to looking back on it, he said, you know, I've got to do something to repay this hobby that's been so good to me. And there's so many people that operate under that sort of a premise. Now, one of the things, and I'll share this with you because you're asking me, you know, about my beginnings, and I don't like talking about me because I talk about me too much. The thing is that I have two sons right now that are radio engineers that work professionally in the radio business. One is Matt, KG4WXX, who is the chief engineer for the Dave Ramsey Show, which is a huge syndicated radio show. Matter of fact, they're inducting Ramsey into the Radio Hall of Fame at the National Association of Broadcasters this year. You know, he's boy, talk about an achievement. And Matt works for them, wonderful organization. My older son, David, is a chief engineer, works with Trevecca Nazarene University doing television production and all. Just, I don't think if there's something that has to do with radio or broadcasting or TV, he's in the middle of it over there. These two fellows had no college. They've had no professional training. They worked with their dad going to radio transmitter sites and living inside of radio stations, but a good portion, the majority of the of what they know, hands-on, practical, and all that, comes from amateur radio and their experience in amateur radio, from pulling dipoles up in trees, you know, from plugging things in to a wall outlet and having the device take your picture. You know, big flash of light and smoke coming out. The hobby is so unusual in that it's such a great way for a young person to learn technology hands-on, that these two now professionally work as radio engineers, and it's a direct result of this hobby and what this hobby has given to them. The same thing happened to me when I was very young. I got introduced to amateur radio, and I wound up in the broadcast business, worked on air at radio stations, have been a chief engineer for years now, working for a radio group here in Nashville and other stations in the past. And all of this comes from the abilities that, I mean, when you work with transmitters and you know how to dip the plate, you know,
right,
and you learn hands-on, when you see final tubes turning cherry red, when you see the antenna come into resonance, and all these different things that you learn, these are things that you take right straight into the business world, into the commercial arena, and now you know what? You're a cut above the guy that just has a certificate from a university.
Because absolutely,
you know what you know. And so I guess what I'm saying is that the reason why we do QSO, I do QSO, we all work on it together, is because we believe that this hobby is one of the very few hobbies that really and truly is a life-changing experience. And, you know, you look at technology, look at cell phone technology that came out of amateur radio, satellite technology, all these different things that came out of ham radio that most of the general public has no idea where the origins of these things were. I think that when you get a whole group of people together, like you have at the Dayton Hamvention, and especially with Dayton giving out awards the way they do, to the folks that get the awards, if we pay attention to all of this, there's something to be learned from it. Because I really believe this is something that is very, very worthwhile, but worthwhile to the point of being extremely unusual. And it's there's no other place, I don't think, in the world of hobbies or the world of learning experiences and things like that, where all of this all comes together under one roof. And so I think that's a thing that's one of the parts of the things about Dayton that makes it so very special, that puts that magic into an event that is unduplicated, really, when you travel across the United States. So that, I mean, that's, I don't know, I'm off on a tangent here. Mel, let's talk about the dates in May, and let's talk about the times in terms of when people should plan to arrive, and let's go down that road, and let's give the website URL out again so folks are very, very familiar with this. Now, if you have not been to Dayton, this is a good chance to get acquainted with this event. And let me say this. Even though the crowd is big, don't let that frighten you, because it's very, very navigable. I mean, you can get around in Dayton very easy. It's not like you're in a crowd of people and, you know, you can't move about and all that kind of thing. The crowd is very friendly, very accommodating. And so let's talk about the dates, and let's talk about when folks should really, you know, plan to arrive. I know, how long is it going to take to do what they have to do as far as getting their the paperwork and stuff together, and how much of it can be done online prior to the event? And let's go down that road. And you're the expert, so I'm going to let you talk about that.
Well, the actual Hamvention is May 17th, 18th, 19th. And if I were coming into Hamvention, I might want to get there a couple days early, get settled, get into your hotel room. And there are some activities, you know, we have on our website. We have different places that you can visit while you're there. But also, I want to tell you that on Thursday, all day from the Hamvention site, our Dayton Convention and Visitors Bureau will be having bus tours that will take you around to the different sites in the region. And one of the sites in the region that is a particular favorite is the Air Force Museum. It's one of the largest Air Force air museums in the world, and it takes probably a couple days to get through it, but you can see a lot of it in a day, and it's a magnificent place. But I would try to get there a day or two early. Make sure you're not waiting to the last minute to get your reservations made. And last year we had right around 25,000 people attended. We're expecting more than that this year. I would, you know, make sure that you're looking at the website ahead of time. And get all your information there, where you're going to park, and get it all set up. It is getting around at Hamvention can be a bit of a task at first because it looks so big. Don't be afraid to ask for help. You know, I mean, we're communicators. We ought to be asking, where do I find this? Where do I find that? And we're trying to put more signs up all the time to guide people from one place to another. And, of course, we have a very nice program, which is free. When you get there, you'll be able to receive the program. But, I think you get all this information at our website, www.hamvention.org.
That's hamvention.org, not .com, .org. And if you just remember the word hamvention, Even if you go to Google, it's going to take you right straight to the Dayton Hamvention. And if you have a chance, go up to our website, which is QSORadioshow.com. And we have, I don't know, I think we have the largest collection of Dayton pictures from last year. I don't know how many's up there, but there's, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. There must be 1,000 photographs up there or more. I think everything was photographed from stem to stern. You really get a good feel of looking at it. Most folks that I've talked to said that if they went and looked at the pictures, they said, God, we got to go next year. So, you know, go up to QSORadioshow.com and look at the pictures of the Dayton Hamvention. And then hamvention.org. I would go there now and start studying and looking and seeing what you want to do and how you want it. Because, okay, now let me ask you this. Can you register online? Can you go up there and
yes.
get your tickets online, pay for everything online, and then get your hotel room reserved, unless you plan on just driving in for one day and leaving? I wouldn't suggest that. I really wouldn't. I think that if you come for one day, you're going to be a bit frustrated because you can't see everything in that period of time. However, if that's all you can do, it'll definitely whet your appetite. But if you're going to come for one day, I'd plan on what I want to look at. I'd plan at what I want to see or what forums I want to attend and all that sort of thing. And now when we do, when the awards are given out, when does that happen?
Well, the awards event, we have a special it's more of a private event. We can't invite everybody at the – we have a special dinner and ceremony for that. However, at 1 o'clock on Sunday, we present the awards for the public to see right there in Hare Arena right before we have the prize drawing. And that's always an exciting moment too.
I know I sat next to Bill Pasternak one year, and we watched the presentation, and he was sitting there next to us waiting to see if he won anything, you know.
Yeah. Good for Bill.
And we had a good time talking and whatnot. What a character. Of course, he comes in from California, and well, you know, of course, now with it being international, there's people come in from all over the world. But as far as the United States is concerned, people come in from everywhere. And of course, now the ARRL has a big, huge display there. They have all sorts of things set up in there. I mean, and I can't even think of the different facets. I'd almost have to get somebody from the league to come on and talk about all of that. But they have different booths of different sections, and of course, it's a great place. It's an incredible place to buy ARRL T-shirts. And books and anything else that you can think of that you see online. It isn't that strange. I mean, you see all these things online, you see a catalog, but then when you start walking through the area, it's like, oh, I got to have this. I got to have that, you know? So, one year they had in these incredible Field Day T-shirts they were selling. And, we got on and started talking about the Field Day T-shirts, you know, like weeks beforehand and said, you know, come to date your Field Day T-shirt. And, I said, you know, when you get your T-shirt, come by our booth and wave it at us if we're on the area. I had left the booth for a little while to go out into the flea market, and a friend of mine came over and sat down. And he was sitting at the table. When I come back, he says, I can't figure it out. I said, what's the matter? He said, all these people are coming by waving T-shirts. He had no idea what was going on, but it was hysterical because there were people coming by waving those T-shirts. So, anyhow, well, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about Dayton. It's so hard, Michael, to talk about the Dayton Hamvention and do it in a couple of hours and cover everything and talk about everything and to kind of capture what the event is all about. But before we come to a close, I want you to take off in any direction you want to go in and talk about anything you think we've missed or anything that's on your mind or anything that you really want to emphasize.
I really appreciate that opportunity. I would like to say, Ted, that, you know, you asked me about the names of the people that are involved in this, and I'm really worried that I might be leaving names out. So We may want to just so many people that do so much, and not one particular person does more than anyone else. So, but look for the guys and gals wearing their green shirts. And I would also can't emphasize enough, look at the website. And for those of you who are listening from other parts of the world outside of the United States and you are thinking about coming, we have a tab there for international visitors, and we're having a special event, a kind of a welcoming, if you will, that will be occurring on the Thursday before Hamvention, and it's for our international visitors. And the information is there as well. But Ted, I mean, there's so much to talk about in Hamvention. You know, there's lots of lore, lots of things that have happened. Yeah, you mentioned the plumbing thing that happened a couple of years ago, and you know what? We're amateur radio operators, and we take a slamming and keep on hamming. So I appreciate the opportunity to be on with you and to be able to talk to many folks out there. And my call is Whiskey 8 Charlie India. And if you have any personal information or personal mail you'd like to send to me, you can send it to WHCI, Whiskey 8 Charlie India, at ARRL.net.
All righty. And before we go, I'll share with you one of my favorite Dayton Hamvention stories. Now, are you ready for this?
Yeah, go
okay.
ahead.
There was a bunch of fellows that used to operate on a frequency of 3895. They called themselves the Alligators, okay? The frequency at that time was infamous. It was everybody knew about it, everybody listened to it, okay? And these guys would get on, and they did this spoof. They did it every year for at least 4 or 5 years that I know of. And one fella would stage a fight with another guy on that frequency. And at the culmination of it, one would threaten the other and say, okay, at Dayton, you know what, buddy? You're going to go down in front of the Heathkit booth at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I want to see you there. And I'm going to, you know, beat the whatever out of you, you know. 2 o'clock in front of the Heathkit booth, okay? It was a spoof, okay? So at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, this crowd would gather in front of the Heathkit booth, expecting to see a rumble, you know, or something. And these guys are all standing around talking, you know, and, of course, all of them, you know, are up in years and whatnot. And you know, they're just having a good time. And as they look across the crowd, they can see all the newbies, you know, that don't know anything about this thing. And, of course, they'd go around and kind of spread the word in the crowd. Somebody would say, well, wasn't that so-and-so supposed to do? What was going on? You know, and of course, it never happened because it was a spoof, you know. But they would pull those guys in, and then next year they'd do exactly the same thing, and now they got a whole bunch of new guys. Oh, are you going to go to Dayton? Don't you know that so-and-so is just going to beat the daylights out of so-and-so at 2 o'clock in front of the Heathkit booth, you know? And this would spread around. And every year, I remember the last year I was there, the crowd at 2 o'clock was huge. I don't know if you ever heard this before, but it was a woof-hong kind of thing, you know? I mean, but I used to get the biggest bang out of going over there at 2 o'clock and watching all this happen. And all the key players, I mean, they were all good-natured fellas, and they were just having fun, you know. So,
but, oh yeah, you know, I think we all have those Hamvention stories, but that's a great one, Ted.
It was priceless. Of course, now there's no Heathkit booth, so you know. But right. You know, maybe who knows? Maybe that. Of course, there's a lot more booths now than there were back then, and a lot more companies making amateur gear and whatnot. Well, listen, that was my Dayton story. I thought it was funny. I was younger. I got a big bang out of it. Michael Coulter, WHCI, I really appreciate you coming on board. Folks, plan on attending Hamvention this year, because one thing is for sure, and that is you won't be disappointed, and you will have a good time at Dayton. And if it's your first time, it's something you'll never forget. And if you've been in the past and you're thinking to yourself, I don't know if I want to go this year, you know, make plans and come on and join us, because we're going to be there broadcasting through the whole thing on WTWW, and you be sure and come by the booth and say hello, sit down and talk with us on the air, especially if you've got a club.
That's
you
all
talk
the time we have for this week's QSO. A special thanks to Michael Coulter, WHCI, for joining us today. And by the way, if you know someone that you think would be a good guest for QSO, shoot us an email and let us know at tedrandall@tedrandall.com. Once again, thank you for listening.